This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. Coming up on Africa News Tonight, gunfire explosions rock Burkina Faso's capital early today. Sierra Leone is preparing for elections next week. And over the past four decades or so, Lake Chad has shrunk by up to 90%. We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story, Burkina Faso Information Minister says extremists have been killed in an attack on the French embassy and French cultural center in the capital, Ouagadougou. Witnesses say armed men got out of a car and opened fire on passerbys before heading to the embassy at the start of today's attack. French President Emmanuel Macron's office says he is following the situation and French authorities are urging French citizens to avoid the city center. The U.S. Embassy also warned Americans to stay out of the city center. A message posted on Facebook by the embassy said, "Attack underway at the French embassy and French institute. Stay indoors." There has been no immediate claim of responsibility for the attack. Joining us here in the studio is our colleague from the VOA French to Africa service, Bagasi Kora. Welcome to Africa News Tonight, Bagasi.
Hi, thank you.
As you heard in the report, according to press reports, gunfire explosions have rocked Burkina Faso's capital today. What is the latest story that you have on the situation?
What we have right now is that six assailants have been killed, and authorities says they don't know yet if there is other left that they are still looking for, and seven military have been killed, so that make it to 13 killed in total, and 70 people right now have been wounded, and 64 of them are still in the military camp being taken care of by health agent.
And heavy smoke was seen rising from the Army Joint of Staff Office, heavy explosions around the military headquarters in the western part of the capital. Are French troops providing security?
Yes. What we need to know, it happened at 10 in the morning. And
yes,
whether it's the military headquarters or the French embassy, both are in downtown, so it was a busy time. And the two attacks took place simultaneously, like a half mile in between the French embassy and the military headquarters. Four assailants went to the French embassy and tried to penetrate. They failed. And that's when the French troop, we have what is called Operation Sabre. It's a French mission in Ouagadougou. It's 10 kilometers outside of Ouagadougou. Then they flew in with a combat helicopter to intervene at the French embassy, and they were able to kill at that place four of the assailants, and two have been killed at the military base where they went with a car bomb that exploded at the entrance. And we have seven military that have been killed. Two have been burned in the explosion.
So are there enough troops to protect against attacks, not only in the capital, but in the country at large as well?
Yeah, there is enough troop, but what you need to know is Burkina Faso is part of this Sahel, this whole Sahel insurgency, where you have Burkina, which has a border with Niger, and then where across from that border you have American soldiers who have been killed back at the end of last year.
Yes.
And then you have Mali, where you have a several group of terror groups affiliated with Al-Qaeda or ISIS. And Burkina has 1,200 kilometers with Mali. And being one of the poorest countries on earth, it's really hard to protect such a border. So they are almost free to, you know,
come and go.
Mm-hmm. You know, so it's really tough.
The French embassy says it was attacked. How badly damaged was the embassy? Was anyone hurt in the French embassy?
No, the French are saying no one was hurt.
Okay.
No French was hurt. And We are advising everybody to avoid downtown because we are still a huge military presence and we are still looking for other people who might be loose.
Okay, so the perpetrators seem to be Islamist extremists, but are there any other terrorist active groups in the country besides?
The main one that we have been talking about this week, because the State Department called them a global terror group, is Ansarul Islam. It's the first and the only Islamic group in Burkina Faso,
okay,
because most Islamic groups were always in Mali or toward the Maghreb, and now they push all the way down, and now we have a local Islamic group. And some witnesses, it's not confirmed yet, are saying that some have been talking local language. Some of the asylum today have been heard talking local languages. So it might be people who have been recruited on the ground.
Is Burkina Faso receiving any other security assistance from Sahel countries committed to fighting terrorism?
Yes. Burkina Faso is one of the main country part of what is called the G5 Sahel. G5 Sahel is Mauritania, Chad, Niger, Mali, and Burkina Faso. And we are putting together this force, 10,000 troops, 5,000 troops, to combat Islamic insurgents in this region. And they also have French base, as I mentioned in the beginning, in the country, and French troops are really helping in the fight. And maybe that's why French also has been attacked. We don't have a clear explanation, but French is maybe paying for the support for these countries.
Thank you, Bagasi. That was VOA's Bagasi Kora from VOA French to Africa Service. Five police officers have been killed and three others reportedly injured after suspected Al-Shabaab militants attacked two security camps in Kenya's northeastern town of Mandera on the border with Somalia. Rael Ombor reports from Nairobi.
The attack comes barely a month after suspected Al-Shabaab militants killed three people in Wajir, a town also on Kenya-Somalia border. Friday's early morning attack occurred at the Kenya Police and Administration Police Camps in Fino Town. Abdi Rizak is a member of Mandera County Assembly and works just 40 kilometers from Fino. He said for 2 weeks, there has been information circulating that an attack would happen. He said local leaders had given the information to agencies because locals were skeptical about working with police.
The local people are fearing to give the government the information. Well, they're telling that this person, if he's bring our information, they are thinking that the government said this, you are the part of Al-Shabaab. That is the people. That is why the people of the local are fearing to bring the information. But for us as the leaders, when you're giving them the information, some of them, when you tell them the information, they told you they are aware.
George Musamali is a security analyst in Nairobi. He said local communities in Mandera were critical in the fight against terrorism and should not be ignored.
We have very many sympathizers of Al-Shabaab within the local population. And then we have another group that is not sympathetic to Al-Shabaab that is willing to share information with the security agencies. And there's no way we can fight terrorism or any form of crime without collaborating in members of the local communities. In security, we call this popular intelligence.
Musamali says this specific attack could have been avoided.
Most unfortunate bit is that right now we can't blame the intelligence, because the information we have out here is that intelligence had given information about this imminent attack. They had even given the police the name of the ringleader of the group that was coming to carry out the attack in that area. And therefore, it clearly shows there's a lot of laxity within the security organ. Clearly, this was a well-planned and coordinated attack. And it calls into question the measures that have been put in place by the Kenyan government to secure that part of the country.
Al-Shabaab has frequently attacked Kenya, hitting civilian targets in retaliation for Kenya's involvement in military action against the group in Somalia. Rael Ombor for VOA News, Nairobi.
The Sierra Leone National Electoral Commission says the upcoming general election will be credible and transparent. Albert Masakwa is spokesman for the Electoral Commission. He says there are ongoing talks with the political parties and other stakeholders to address their concerns in the run-up to next week's elections. Sierra Leoneans go to the polls on Wednesday to choose a new president, parliament, mayoral and local council representatives. President Ernest Bai Koroma is constitutionally barred from seeking additional terms after serving two terms in office. VOA's Peter Cloete in the capital, Freetown, recently spoke with Sierra Leone's Electoral Commission spokesman, Albert Masakwa, and asked him for details about his recent meeting with party leaders.
The meeting went all well. Besides that, we'll be meeting regularly with political parties because we have a forum called PPLC, Political Parties Horizontal Meeting. The recent ones, there are a lot of issues that have come up regarding bullying day activity and the political parties. We met with them. They raised concerns such as the issue of announcing voters' name so that political party agents can cross-check from the register, which they requested and the commission has granted that every political party agent have the register. That was one of the great successes of the engagement with political parties.
Some of the political parties said they would be naive to think that the elections would be transparent. Previously, how the Electoral Commission organized elections, what would be different this time, and will you address their concerns before next week's elections?
Indeed, we've been addressing their concerns, and we would continue as a commission to address whatever concerns, as long as it is within legal provisions, which is very much key in what we are doing. It is going to be different because, in as much as we've been conducting good elections, we hope to conduct better elections. And from the procedures that we've put in past elections, political parties were not allowed to have the register with them. And now, every political party agent would have the register to cross-check activities on polling day, which is very much key. Also, the issue of the results sheet. They are now serialized. They have serial numbers where when political parties append their signature, they can take that as their own reference point. So all of these ones help to add value to the electoral process so that if there are any issues for resolution, go back to some of these documents which we are open enough to give them, which they have and they can use as reference materials.
And talking about the ballot papers that recently came in, the political parties' representatives were there to receive them. They were sent to the provinces all across the country. What have you heard from these parties? Because some of them were saying they were not too happy with the process, including the printing of the ballot itself before it was brought into the country, that they were not represented during the printing of the ballot papers outside the country.
Well, unfortunately, we don't have the infrastructure to print ballot papers in country. But what is important, we're giving all the political parties the CR numbers by range of all of the ballot papers. So each political party has knowledge about the number of ballot papers that have been printed, and they have all of this information. Whether you are there or not, the fact of the matter is you have the quantity, the serial numbers of the number, the ballot papers. And when the ballot papers came at the Lungi International Airport, from the records that we gave, they had to check and they confirmed that indeed what we told them and what they was checked a match, which is very much key in the electoral process. And from there, at the international airports, we actually threw onto the storage facility. The political parties went, or rather they were with the process. They followed through from arrival of the ballot. Of course, we cannot have all of the political parties be present where we're going to print the ballot paper. But since the arrival of the ballot papers, they have been part of the process and we're giving them records of what they should know, and they are happy with that and the process is going on. Since then, they are okay.
How transparent do you think these elections will be?
Well, one major factor with regards to transparency is the constant engagement that we're giving the political parties, even building their capacity, ensuring that they know the electoral laws. For instance, the issue of the recount of ballots. We've told them every political party agent has the right to request for a recount. There is need. In the past, nobody, even when it is in law, nobody cares or cares to know whether you can ask for a recount. So we told the political parties the process is transparent. If you still feel aggrieved, you can ask for a recount. It is your right, it is in law. And because we are building the capacity of these political parties, we are sensitizing them, we are giving them the awareness. So it has opened up the political space for them to ask as much questions as possible.
That's Albert Masakwa of Sierra Leone's Electoral Commission. He was speaking with reporter Peter Cloete. 19 past the hour, you were listening to Africa News Tonight on The Voice of America. Roughly 30 million people from Nigeria, Niger, Cameroon and Chad depend on Lake Chad for their drinking water and their livelihoods. However, over the past four decades or so, Lake Chad has shrunk by up to 90%. VOA's Adam Phillips reports on the environmental disaster it causes and its human impact.
Alex DeSherbinin is a senior researcher at the Earth Institute at Columbia University. He says climate change and human mismanagement are among the many reasons Lake Chad is drying up. He says temperatures in the area have gone up nearly 2 degrees Celsius since the 1960s.
That's a lot. Lake Chad being a closed basin, that temperature increase is going to essentially evaporate the water perhaps faster than it comes in terms of the rainfall levels. We've also seen some decreases in rainfall in that region. It's already an arid region that borders to the south, a semi-arid region, which basically includes Nigeria, Cameroon, parts of Chad itself.
Mismanagement has contributed to the lake's decline in several ways. Many new dams and reservoirs have been built on the tributaries that used to feed Lake Chad, trapping water needed for traditional fishing and farming. The water's retreat has exposed islands that were once reachable only by boat, making them more vulnerable to attack by Boko Haram militants from northern Nigeria.
There are raids that are occurring in those areas. People are being taken captive. And there's been substantial damage to the traditional livelihoods of those communities that lived on the lake. Those factors, I think, have set the stage in part for the migration crisis that has ensued over the last 10 years, roughly.
The organization Climate Refugees, which studies the connection between climate change and security, says the Lake Chad crisis has displaced about 2.4 million people. Executive Director Amali Tower says many have fled Boko Haram over the past decade as the Nigerian government has battled the Islamic militants.
A security response to Boko Haram by the states that are involved in this conflict has been to push Boko Haram from more of the urban into the rural hinterlands. This is not considered to be by the sort of political center to be an important area.
But she says migration in the area began decades before Boko Haram became a threat.
As the lake started to dry up, both for man-made and environmental reasons, they moved along with the path of the lake so that they would have access to water. As fishing started to erode, people started changing their careers to more trade, you know, or as agricultural land became less available, people have resorted to all kinds of different means to survive, all dependent upon the lake.
Tower adds that the Lake Chad area has always been remote and marginalized, but it hasn't always been desperately poor.
A lot of the refugees and IDPs I spoke to, internally displaced persons, spoke of being so wealthy once upon a time. They had all the means with which to not just survive, but to thrive. One refugee leader in a camp in Diffa, Niger, told me, I was able to keep my child in school. You know, there's a lack of schools, so it's important that you're not constantly migrating and following the path of the water if you want to be able to educate your children. So it's incredibly disruptive.
Expert opinion is divided over whether the destruction of Lake Chad's ecosystems can be slowed or reversed. Alex DeSherbinin says that a halt to the fossil fuel emissions that cause global warming would help enormously, but admits that would be a Herculean task that would take required sustained political will.
The other issue is whether you could allow more water to pass through the dams and the sort of irrigation schemes and kind of re-engineer the system, as has been done in some other regions of the world. For instance, in the Senegal River Valley, they created an artificial flood.
Amali Tower says policymakers must realize the extent to which climate change, migration, and security are connected. She also says that far more international aid is needed to help area residents obtain drought-resistant seeds and other technologies so fields and fisheries can thrive once again. Adam Phillips, VOA News, New York.
So Some 700 Zimbabwean refugees who fled to Botswana during the bloody 2008 presidential election say they want their safety guaranteed before they return home. Some lost their homes during a deadly crackdown on opposition supporters a decade ago. This week, the new Zimbabwe government called on the refugees to come back home. From Gaborone, Botswana, reporter Martin Ngwenya has the details.
Wasu Chibi was an active opposition MDCT supporter in his rural province of Masvingo in the run-up to the 2008 presidential election in Zimbabwe. The often violent and deadly poll pitted two men against each other, then Zimbabwean President Robert Mugabe and his erstwhile rival Mr. Morgan Tsvangirai. Mugabe's ruling party supporters unleashed a reign of terror, displacing Chibi and hundreds of other opposition supporters, some who fled into neighboring Botswana. Scores were left dead. Today, there are 700 Zimbabwean refugees staying at a refugee camp in Dukwi, just outside Botswana's second city of Francistown. They've been reluctant to return home despite pleas from the host government, which argues conditions have improved in Zimbabwe for their safe return. This week, following Zimbabwean President Emmerson Mnangagwa's visit to Botswana, the refugees were again asked to return home. This time, the plea was not from Harare but from Harare, where Zimbabwe's Home Affairs Minister Obed Mpofu said there was no need for them to remain in Botswana. But Chibi, who is a spokesperson for the Zimbabwean refugees, says they cannot return without any guarantees of their safety from authorities in Harare.
...of Zimbabwe now want all refugees back home to Zimbabwe. Then we requested that they should give us a representative who is going to come to Dukwi. He is going to answer the questions that we have and maybe actually give us the way forward. How are they going to receive us since we've been in hiding for all this? And is the ground level enough?
He says they've already been given forms to fill out, indicating that they want to return home, but the refugees want a Zimbabwean government representative to address them first. Another refugee, Agnes Chiwaza, also wants answers before she considers returning home.
How do we go back to Zimbabwe after our families were tortured, our homes were burnt down, and as a result, there was a lot of disintegration? We need an assurance from the government that things will be sorted out.
The Zimbabwean government has agreed to send a representative to Dukwi, although no date has been set for a meeting. Refugees fear that as Zimbabwe prepares for another election, violence might actually flare up. This comes amid reports that ZANU-PF supporters are intimidating their opposition counterparts. This as politicians on all sides prepare for an expected election in June. Home Affairs Minister Dr. Mpofu claims after the Botswana visit last week, his country was initially not aware that there were Zimbabwean refugees in the neighboring country. He says they must return home, but will undertake a further fact-finding mission to Botswana soon. Reporting for VOA's English to Africa service, this is Martin Ngwenya in Harare, Botswana.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. For listeners on VOA's Nairobi FM station, please stay tuned for the Swahili Evening News coming up at 16:30 UTC. For all other listeners, please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports. Tune in again at 1800 UTC for another edition of African News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Nelson Lopes, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
Savor the flavor of African music. I'm Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Tune in, feast your ears, and dig in to an hour of amazing Pan-African music, featured interviews, and music news. Music Time in Africa, Saturday and Sunday at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there.
VOA.
On weekends, tune into Nightline Africa at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our five-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
VOAAfrica.com.
On VOAAfrica.com, the news updates never stop. Our primary goal is to keep you informed.
VOAAfrica.com, your trusted source for news and information.